I'm Christian Esquera, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's start by dissecting the news. They say that if you don't like the way this country's being run today, go out, vote smart, and pick new leaders in 2022. This is the right thing to do, but not as easy or cute as it sounds. Because before one can even cast his ballot, a lot of factors come into play and ultimately influence the outcome. It's basically money, that which provides politicians a strong grip on voter behavior, regardless of whether he performs once in public office. Worse, it allows political clans to occupy elective positions across electoral cycles, facing no real threat unless their power is weakened by equally moneyed or wealthier families. This explains why, despite efforts to improve our level of voter education, we're still basically stuck with the same leaders. Those have the money, the machinery, and the popularity. Now, once in a while, a new breed of reform-oriented leaders come, but it's just a matter of time before the system pushes them out or eats them altogether. The problem, indeed, is systemic. Tonight, we'll try to better explain to you, the voters, how money and patronage politics work in the Philippines, and what we can all do to fix our fractured political and electoral system before all is too late. Now, be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat, or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Now, joining us tonight is Professor Julio Tihangki. He's the author of the study, Clientelism and Party Politics in the Philippines. Also with us is Dean Ronald Mendoza of the Ateneo School of Government, and attorney Michael Henry Yusinko, a fellow at the Institute for Autonomy and Governance. Good evening, gentlemen. Nice to have you all on the same program this evening.
Good evening, Christian.
Magandang gabi, Christian. Dean July, Mike.
Good evening, Christian.
Magandang gabi sa inyo lahat.
And Dean Ron.
We have a very important discussion for tonight, especially with the coming elections. It's less than a year before people go out and vote again in 2022. So it's very important for them to understand the things that are ailing our electoral system. So for tonight, we're going to talk about patronage politics. I'd like to start with former LaSalle Dean Julio Tihangki. You've done a lot of studies about patronage politics, clientelism. First, give us the basics. What exactly do we mean when you say patronage politics?
Okay, thank you, Christian. The Philippines takes pride in being the oldest democracy in Asia, and yet our democracy has been found lacking or wanting. No? And we have so far failed to transform democracy into development, and we have not really seen the fruits of democratic consolidation. The reason for this is because of the way we have structured our politics, particularly in terms of election. And in the political science literature, this is what is known as patronage politics, or also known as patron-client relation, which is basically the relationship between a giver, a patron, somebody who provides benefits, no, usually material resources, distributable resources to individual voters in exchange for political support. So usually you have a patron, no, hence you have what is known as patronage democracy, because politicians, usually those who run an election, usually compete not only for seats of power, but rather for the resources that they can accumulate, which in turn they can distribute back to their followers and the voters. So it creates a cycle of dependency between the patron and the client. Now, patronage and clientelism are two terms that are used interchangeably, but patronage refers to the resources. Usually public resources, but it can also be non-public resources that are distributed by the patron. And clientelism refers to the relationship between the giver and the receiver.
So clientelism, you don't have to be occupying a public office at a particular time. Okay.
Yes. For example, in the past, no, patron-client ties have been built around landlord-tenant relations, no, because it was so easy for the landlord, no, to just command his tenants, no, farmers, to vote for whomever he pleases. So in the pre-martial law era, even way back in the colonial era, no, most of our elections and party politics were built around this kind of a relationship based on land. No? And of course, with the modernization of the economy and the reciprocal, no, consensual nature of this relationship was eroded by modernization. What emerged was a more transactional relationship to be found in urban areas such as slum areas, in which now you have machine politicians distributing promises of employment, of money, of recommendation, of health benefits, no, in exchange for momentary support in an electoral cycle. So that's what you call machine politics.
Okay. For Dean Ronald Mendoza, let's talk directly to the Filipino voters who will go out and vote in 2022. Usually, maraming reklamo, hindi rin nila gusto yung nangyayari ngayon. So they can do something about it in the polling precincts next year. But at this point, let's explain to them why patronage politics is a problem when you talk about our electoral system. Because sometimes people might think, anong problema? May binibigay nga sa yung politika eh. So that is a direct benefit to me. But looking at the big picture, why is it a problem and a very serious one? Dean Ronald.
Salamat, Christian. Gagamitin ko Tagalog, no, para maintindihan ng mga kababayan natin sana itong topic na to. Napakahalaga. I agree with Dean July. Napakahalaga nitong issue to ng patronage. From my perspective, yung ibibigay sa yung panandaliang tulong, panandaliang lifeline, no, sa ating mga kababayan, may pinanggalingan yan. Kaya sila may maaring ibigay sa inyo is because meron silang kinuha somewhere else. At yung somewhere else na yan, yan ang tinatawag ng mga ekonomista na rent seeking, ang ginagawa ng mga makapangyarihan sa ating bansa. Ngayon, kung maayos sila na pinuno, hindi nila palalaguin yung rent seeking na yan, gagawin nilang parehas para hindi yan ang inaatupag ng mga pinuno natin, kundi pagpapasagana ng kabuhayan ng Pilipino at pagpapalago ng ekonomiya ng Pilipinas. Pero hindi yan ang focus ng sabihin na nating ilang mga pinuno natin, kasi nagpapayaman sila habang nasa pwesto sila. So lumalaki ang kanilang mga salen, lumalago ang kanilang mga business at ng mga crony nila habang may kapangyarihan sila, dahil yung kapangyarihan, pwede nilang i-manage yung rent ng ekonomiya natin. So yan yung tinatawag na rent seeking. Yan ang pangit na kakambal ng patronage politics. Kaya sila merong ibibigay sa inyo is because meron silang kinuha rin sa atin. Kinuha nila doon sa kaban ng bayan, doon sa binayad nating taxes, o di kaya naman ay pinayaman nila yung sarili nila at kanilang mga business at business ng kanilang mga crony dahil nasa pwesto sila at hindi nila ginawang parehas yung ekonomiya. So yan yung magkasama na kailangan natin buwagin.
So para kang ginigisa sa sariling mantika, dahil in the first place, collective money and resources ng bayan yung ginagamit nila para ipamudmod sa select group of people to get them in debt, to get them to be indebted to them.
Exactly.
At nakikita natin yan, di ba?
Exactly. At kaya sila hindi nauubusan ng pangpamigay is because mas malaki pa yung inimbak nila para sa sarili nila. Kumbaga, eh, barya lang yung nakakaabot sa ating mga kababayan. At kung malilin lang tayo at ibibigay natin yung boto natin dahil dun sa maliit na naipamudmod sa atin, ay nadaya tayo dahil mas malaki yung kanilang inimbak para sa sarili nila at sa mga crony nila. Yun ang kailangan nating itigil.
Yung parang nagkaroon tayo ng utang na loob na ang bait ni congressman, ang bait ni senador, ang daming binibigay sa amin. Pero hindi mo nakikita, mas marami siyang iniipon para sa sarili niya. No? Okay, let's go to Attorney Mike Yusinko. So, but how do you make voters understand this more deeply and somehow trigger some chain reaction in terms of change in the way they look at elections in the Philippines? I've been seeing your post, diba? Meron kang consistent na hashtag dyan eh. Iba naman sa 2022. How exactly can we fix this problem, which is very, very serious?
Well, Christian, that's the $1 million question, no? No pun intended. But really, that's the that's the conundrum that Dean July and Dean Ron have been dealing with since they began studying patronage relationships and political dynasties. Now, there are two ways to go about that. That's the institutional approach, which refers to the favorite phrase of one of our friends is changing the rules of the game, right? That's one approach. But the approach that I'm taking is really the advocacy approach, which is, which means going directly to the voters, right? So that's why you can see that hashtag that I always put out, because I got that from the supporters of one of the most remarkable dynasty slayers that we've had, Mayor Vico Soto. That was the rallying cry of his supporters, iba naman, right? So to them, that sentiment was so true to their heart that they actually manifested that in their vote. Yeah, they voted someone na iba naman, hindi naman dynasty. So, and now they're reaping the fruits of that decision, that risk that they took on a new, well, relatively new local chief executive, right? So that's one way of addressing that problem. But that's just one way.
But
that's
how they make
directly
this,
to the voters.
But how they make this more of a norm than an exception? Because you might have a good number of politicians like the one you cited, but ultimately they might be overwhelmed by the system that they have been trying to change. And eventually that might they might be eased out or be rendered irrelevant.
So that responsibility of inculcating that kind of mindset in our voters, as far as the state apparatus is concerned, that responsibility falls on the COMELEC. Okay? If you look at the Omnibus Election Code, if you look at the Constitution, the COMELEC has the responsibility of ensuring a fair, free and honest elections, right? That's their general mandate. And part of that is making sure that voters understand what the right of suffrage really means, right? So it entails a broad array of mechanisms that the COMELEC should be instituting in terms of education, in terms of tightening up the political party regulation that they are authorized to do. So these are some of the mechanisms, some of the measures that the COMELEC can implement, can do, and probably have been doing to a lesser extent so that the voters understand that the enemy is patronage politics. The enemy is political dynasties.
Okay.
And that therefore they internalize that ethos, the iba naman ethos.
Okay. Dean July, for those who are angling for certain elective positions in 2022, we're already seeing certain manifestations of patronage politics. No? Nakikita natin yan on the ground, whether they're gunning for national or local positions. My question is, given the scale of the problem, given the extent of influence as far as patronage politics is concerned, can a candidate, for instance, afford not to engage in such a practice and still win?
Okay.
Or he has no choice. He has to be the kind of person or politician that he has been loathing in the first place.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to agree with what Dean Ron pointed out earlier. No, it's really a twin problem, no? Both politics and the economy. No? Inequality in both power and resources, no? Economic resources. No? And, you know, ang mas nakakalungkot pa sa sitwasyon natin dahil sa sistema ng ating pamumulitika, lalong-lalo sa halalan, ay mahirap tayong bansa. No? At mayaman tayo, matagal na dapat tayong umunlad, matagal na dapat sumagana ang buhay ng mas nakakaraming Pilipino. Pero dahil sa sistema patronage na tinatawag natin, no, ay kaunti lang ang nakikinabang dito sa economic resources, economic growth natin. At ang dahilan dito ay dahil nga dito sa mga politiko na kinukuha sa kaban ng bayan at pinamumudmud sa mahihirap, pero mas malaki pa yung patong nila. Ang pinakamasaklap dito, isusubo na lang ng mahirap, eh kukunin pa nitong mga politiko ito. No? At ito yung tinatawag nating incumbency advantage. No? Kung bakit laganap ang dynasty. No? Unang-una, in the Philippines, clans and not parties have been the building blocks, no, of electoral politics, no. Wala talagang partido dito sa Pilipinas kundi mga angkan-angkan lang na nagsasama-sama, no. At ang dahilan dito ay dahil nga pag ikaw ay may incumbency advantage, pag ikaw ay nasa poder na, no, nasa iyo lahat ng resources. Eh di siyempre pag itong resources nito ay ipinasa mo sa kamag-anak mo or kayo-kayo lang na ipon tong incumbency advantage nito sa pamilya mo, edi kayo na lang talaga mamumuno dyan. Yan ang dynasty na tinatawag. Ngayon, doon sa sinasabi naman ni Attorney Mike, no, I also agree. No? But the problem with most advocacies in the past, no, yung tinatawag nating voters education, is that we tend to see the voters as blind unthinking receivers of this patronage, no? There have been studies also from our political anthropologists and sociologists that says that in their view, no, it is the weapons of the oppressed, no? Ito ay panahon nila upang kahit papaano may makatanggap sila dito sa mga politikong to, no? So ang hirap dito, no, sa pananaw nila, nakakabawi sila, pero ang hindi nila alam, nalalamangan sila nitong politikong to. Ngayon, kung ikaw naman ang politiko, di ba? Ikaw ba, alimbawa, nag-start ka ng reformist, no? Gusto mong baguhin ang politika, pero sa once na nakapasok ka na, ang hirap-hirap mag-survive kung hindi mo lalaroin yung laro, no? So how do we change political behavior? That's the reason why, and Attorney Mike mentioned it, one of the keys would probably be changing the rules of the game. No? It's an institutional approach. No, it's not a question of good or bad politicians, no, or good or bad voters, but it's again a question of good and bad systems. No? So, yun lang sa akin palagay.
So far, system is bad, or to say it nicely, very bad. Fractured lang muna.
Yeah.
Pero sige, gamitin na natin term. Bad. Okay, Dean Ronald, there's some comments on YouTube, Twitter. Basahin natin iba rito. I don't know what you think about this. Sabi ni Renen, as a teacher, I have been wondering why voter education is not included in the curriculum. DepEd consider including topics like the importance of exercising the right to suffrage, the qualifications to hold a public office, and even political dynasties. Tapos may isang nagtatanong naman, there seems to be a trend among local politicians turning to game show masters, hosting raffles, quiz shows on Facebook. Example daw ba yon ng patronage politics? Dean Ronald.
Well, the first point, I have to say I completely agree. Civic education on our constitution, I'm sure matutuwa yung kaibigan ko si Attorney Mike Yusinko doon. Napakahalaga yan na maintindihan ng ating mga kabataan kasi hindi natin ma-appreciate yung ating demokrasya. At meron ding trend recently na hindi natin naiintindihan kung paano talaga tumatakbo ang isang demokrasya. Yun nga yung usapin nung ano ang ambag mo, yung issue ng tumahimik ka na lang, tumulong ka na lang, yung mga ganyang klaseng comment. Hindi nila naiintindihan kung paano tumatakbo talaga ang demokrasya. Ang karapatan ng isang mamamayan na magsalita at i-hold accountable yung gobyerno na siya namang nilaklok niya sa kapangyarihan yung mga tao doon. So may karapatan siyang magsalita. Hindi po pwedeng sabihin na tumahimik ka na lang dyan at mag-ambag ka na lang. Mali yun. In fact, ang tendency nun is mas magkakamali pa yung gobyerno kung tahimik lang tayong lahat. Nakita na nating mali yun nangyayari. Wala pa tayong sasabihin. So yung civic education on our constitution, kailangan natin yan para mas ma-appreciate natin kung ano pa yung kailangan nating gawin para sa ating demokrasya at kung ano yung ating nagawa na para ma-appreciate naman natin yung progress.
Pero din, hindi ba kailangan din ng ganyang civic education ng ilang mga nakaupo sa pwesto, lalo na ngayon? Kasi sa kanila lang gagaling yung ganyang perspective, di ba? Ano bang ambag nyo? Pagod na pagod na nga si tatay namin. Tapos puro kay batikos.
O sige, hindi na ako magbabanggit ng mga pangalan, Christian, pero ang tingin ko kasi yung ang pag-asa ko nasa bata, no? Yung civic education para sa bata. Kung yung matanda ay hindi pa rin nagre-reflect ng democratic values at nung civic service na inahanap natin, ewan ko kung tatalaban pa yan ng civic education. Iba na ang kailangan sigurong gawin natin para dyan. Yung pagboto na natin ng tama sa May 2022. Pero para sa kabataan, sana mas maintindihan ng mga kabataan natin way into the future. Kasi nagkaka-misunderstanding of the last 20 to 30 years. Ano ba yung nagawa natin sa ekonomiya natin, sa demokrasya natin? Ano yung progress na achieve na natin bilang isang bansa? Pati yan, vulnerable to historical revisionism. Kasi kung hindi natin naintindihan kung ano yung binibuild natin towards a stronger democracy, a stronger economy, you can end up not appreciating what we've been managing to put together so far. So napakalaga nun. Yun namang isang tanong nung ating viewer na nagiging game show ba tong Pilipinas. Nakakalungkot, pero kasi yung sitwasyon na maraming nangangailangan at maraming nangangailangan dahil hindi naman napakahusay nung ating response sa pandemya. So nagkaroon ng maraming taong talagang nawalan ng trabaho at nawalan ng trabaho dahil hindi naman talaga maayos yung pagkaka-respond natin sa pag-contain ng COVID-19. So yung economy natin ngayon ay hindi pa rin ganun kalakas. Tapos, in spite of all of this, meron mga politiko na ginagamit yung kahinaan at pangangailangan ng ating mga kababayan ngayon para pasikatin yung sarili nila, para mag-take advantage dun sa sitwasyon. So nakakalungkot kasi dalawang beses sinampal yung kapwa natin Pilipino eh. Mali na nga yung response para protektahan sila. Ngayon, ginagawa pang laro yung tulong na sana eh, karapatan ng Pilipino. Hindi mo dapat gawing laro yung bibigay mo sa Pilipino. So I'm really saddened na ganyan yung nagiging pattern. Ang Pilipino kasi masyadong madali ang kaligayahan natin minsan na we're too forgiving. Pero dapat sana mamulat na tayo na hindi tama yung nangyayari.
Okay. Attorney Mike, yung issue ng binanggit ni Dean Ronald, I think that is very much related to the debt of gratitude. Yung para bang mabigyan ka ng konting tulong, nagpatayo ng bagong kalye o bagong building o waiting shed si mayor o si congressman, para bang naisan lamo na yung buhay mo eh bilang botante, no? Parang ang galing-galing na niya. Pero hindi mo nga naisip na galing sa atin yan at yan ay responsibilidad nila, di ba? At hindi pa nga natin pinag-uusapan kung meron nangyaring corruption behind those programs and projects. So my question is, how do you deal with this? How do you somehow trigger certain behavioral changes? Which we know would have to take a lot of time, no? And how much of this is triggered really by culture? Yung talagang deeply ingrained in our culture.
Alam mo, my first answer to that is that kind of mindset, yung utang na loob, yung kahit na hindi directly ikaw ang nag-benefit, you will still find a way to say na may utang na loob ka dun sa politiko. I think that's already ingrained in our culture, right? That's why I echo yung sinabi ni Dean Ron na yung pag-asa natin sa mga bata eh. Kasi tayong mga tanders, palagi ko, mahihirapan na tayong i-flip yung kultura na yon, yung utang na loob. And I will be the first one to say that I see that in older relatives, in older friends. But yung kabataan natin ngayon, they are now the internet generation eh. So they are exposed to different jurisdictions. So they're exposed to, let's say, what's happening in Switzerland, what's happening in South Korea, what's happening in Taiwan. They're exposed to that. And maybe because of that exposure, something in their minds will flip and say, hindi naman dapat pala kami magtiis sa ganitong klaseng pinuno na bopols, na walang alam kundi magpatawa, walang alam kundi matulog hanggang tanghali, right? Meron naman palang mga pinuno sa ibang bansa, katulad ng South Korea, ng Taiwan, Nasa South Korea, pag kurap ka, ikukulong ka talaga. Nalalabas ka sa korte, nakaposas, at makukulong ka bago ka patawarin. Papatawarin din eventually, but bago ka bigyan ng clemency or pardon, poposasan ka muna at ikukulong ka for a period of time.
So, kasi nga doon, Attorney Mike, the institutions are working. So hindi depende sa personalidad yung pagpapatupad ng batas, di ba? I think kailangan natin expand yung discussion eh. Bakit may mga ibang mga tao inaasa yung pagkuha ng hustisya sa isang TV or radio program, lumalapit sa ilang mga periodista, ilang mga politiko. Kasi nga, there's very little trust in the system that it could work. Or if it could work, they would have to wait. Diba? Related yan sa ganun eh.
That's true. But the danger in that kind of discourse is we might be trapped in the chicken or egg circle eh. Right? So we have to distinguish what's the institutional approach, and Dean July and Dean Ron can take care of that. But what's the direct approach? You know, reaching out to the voters directly. And I would stay on that lane, right? Because I have confidence in the youth of the Philippines. Although it's not monolithic for sure, it's still fragmented according to education and economic lines. But I think their exposure to social media, their exposure to the wide web, and that they are able to see that there is something better out there, that a higher level of governance is achievable, right?
Okay.
That something in their minds will turn and say, iba naman ang ibuboto ko.
Based on our experience over the past few electoral cycles, is there really such a thing as a youth vote? To be able to make a substantial difference in terms of choices in an election?
Yes. Despite the fact that the youth is considered to be the largest demographic in terms of our voter statistics, no? Every election cycle, the youth as a sector has so far not really delivered, no? In terms of electing a presidential candidate. No? So for most political operators and consultants, no, the youth vote is one of the holy grails. No, it's so difficult to organize and ensure to get the youth vote out to support a candidate. The last time the youth became a factor in a presidential election was in 1992 with the candidacy of the late Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago, and later on in 1998 with also the late Senator Raul Rojo. No? So in terms of delivery to a national candidate, we have yet to see the youth vote, no? Being organized. Now, for next year's election, there is hope that finally the youth will make their collective voices heard in terms of through the ballot box, no, given the fact that most of them are digital warriors, they're adept at social media and the internet. And next year's election, given the pandemic, is seen to be a digital election. No, it's going to be fought instead of the traditional air and ground war. It's largely going to be fought within social media, and that's where the youth can make a difference. Because in the past, the youth were just contented in expressing their opinions online and not really going out to vote. No, so the challenge really now is how to harness and convince the youth to be active online, to register, and to actually vote.
Okay, let's go to the issue of vote smart. Voters are often told, vote smart, make the right choice. But what does exactly mean, Dean Ronald? Especially in the face of all these political dynasties and political clans controlling the way politics is run in their respective bailiwicks.
Yeah, well, yun ang gusto nating gawin sana ng ating mga kababayan, to vote smart. No? But, I mean, define smart. Ano ba yung basehan mo ng iyong boto? Meron tayong mga kababayan na baka nawalan na ng pag-asa sa gobyerno ang tingin nila, yun na yung pagkakataon nilang makakuha ng something kahit na konti. Mahalaga yung boto nila, and therefore, you know, susuyuin sila ng mga politiko, bibigyan sila ng konting pera, konting goods, at yan ay yung equivalent ng vote buying, di ba? So, potentially, merong tayong mga kapwa Pilipino na nawawalan na ng pag-asa, at therefore, nalalapit sila dun sa ganung klaseng mga transaksyon. Yun namang mga kabataan, yun namang mga grupo na nagnanais ng mas maayos na gobyerno, mas maayos na kinabukasan para sa ating lahat. Yun ay boto hindi lang para sa sarili, kundi para sa komunidad, para sa bansa. At yun ang gusto sana nating palaguin, no? Na may responsibilidad tayo, hindi lang sa ating sarili at sa ating pamilya, kundi sa ating komunidad at sa ating bansa. Kung sino man yung niluklok natin sa pwesto, meron yung impact sa iba-ibang mga kapwa natin Pilipino. So kung binenta mo yung boto mo, nag-give in ka sa panandaliang tulong, panandaliang benefits dahil sinusuyo ka ng politiko, maaring nakatulong yun sa'yo o sa iyong pamilya, pero isinangla mo yung kinabukasan ng ating mga anak, ng komunidad, at hindi yun maayos. Hindi sana yan ang maging resulta ng desisyon ng ating mga kababayan. So ang voting smart talaga is looking for the community, looking for the nation.
For example, that's very important what you said there, Dean Ronald. Yun ang dapat na pagtingin sa pag sinabing vote smart. Kaso, paano natin siya ipapaintindi? Let's say doon sa isang naghihirap, di ba? Kunwari naglalabada o namamasada sa tricycle. Paano mo siya kukumbinsihin na kailangan ng pagtingin mo sa eleksyon, yung pag-iisip mo, mas malawak, hindi lang pansarili, eh meron siyang napaka-importanting pangangailangan at that time na pinupunan nung panandali ang tulong galing sa politiko na gusto maging patron at siya yung kliyente. Base rin sa sinabi ni Dean July Tihaki, no? So, paano mo siya papalaganapin as a mentality later on sa behavior?
That's the crucial question. And I think the answer is trust again in what we are building together. Yan ang nawala. Kung naniniwala ka na yung boto ko hindi lang para sa pamilya ko, kundi para sa'yo rin. Ikaw din, ang boto mo hindi lang para sa sarili mo, kundi para sa ating lahat. Yun ang nawawala sa ating politika ngayon, yung trust in what we are building together. If you don't have that trust, ang gagawin mo, kukunin mo kung ano yung para sa'yo, kung ano yung para sa pamilya mo. Uunahin ko na yung sarili ko kesa iisipin ko ba na yung inclusive growth mo ba, aabot ba dito sa bayan namin? Magkakaroon ba ako ng trabaho dahil sa inclusive growth mo, Dean Mendoza? Yan ang tanong eh. Kung hindi sila compelled na maniwala ulit dito sa tinatayo natin together bilang isang bansa, very understandable na bumibigay ka agad sila eh. Kasi maraming pinangako in the past, hindi nila nakita, hindi nila naramdaman. Bibigay ka agad sila dahil at least dito may nakuha akong konti nung mahalaga yung boto ko. Pero in the next 3 years, hindi na naman ako mahalaga kasi kahit anong sabihin yung mga ekonomista, hindi naman umaabot sa amin yung mga trabaho, hindi naman umaabot sa akin yung kaginawahan. So ba't ako maniniwala? So I think yung development narrative ang kailangan nating ibalik para buwagin yung polarizing politics na nandyan ngayon sa atin. Kasi maaring namomobilize yung marami nating mga kababayan dahil sa galit, dahil sa polarization, imbis na unification and social cohesion, yung nag-iisa tayo bilang isang bansa at naniniwala ulit na itong itatayo natin ay para sa lahat, hindi lang para sa iilan. So yan ang ginagamit siguro ng ibang mga politiko na, sige, I will bring home the bacon dito sa Pasig o dito sa Ilocos o dito sa Maguindanao. Pero wala yung cohesion in the social and economic development objectives. So sana yun ang ibalik natin.
Before I ask Attorney Mike, medyo na may naalala lang ako sa kinikwento ni Dean Ronald Mendoza. Once I was speaking with this politician who's been out of the limelight for the past 2 or 3 electoral cycles. Tinanong ko siya, sabi ko, bakit ayaw niya nang tumakbo? Medyo crestfallen siya. Sabi niya, mahirap pumasok, bumalik sa politika pag nawala ka na, di ba? Tapos sabi niya, paano kong tatalunin yun? Miskin maglabas ako ng pera, anakin nung nilalabas nung nakaupo over the past 2 electoral cycles. So hawak yung mga barangay captains, meron binibigay na weekly stipend or whatever you wanted to call it. So ordinarily, kung ikaw yung barangay captain, bakit ako tataya dun sa isang reformist? Mm-hmm. E nakikinabang ako over the past several years dito sa mga nakaupong ito, even if that they belong to the same political clan. So they don't really care about that because to them, that is the smart vote. It's their livelihood that's at stake if they vote for the so-called reformists. So yun yung nagiging problema, di ba? So they think in terms of silos. They think in terms of what would benefit them personally.
Okay. Or Christian, they think in terms of self-interest, no? So kasi di ba sa economics, Dean Ronald, no? Di ba utility maximization yan, di ba? Self-interested utility maximizers in voters, no? So ang sagot dyan, kailangan maglatag tayo ng incentives na para wag silang ma-attract dito sa patronage na pinamumudbud ng mga politiko, no? So balik tayo sa institutional reforms, no? Ang titingnan natin dito yung kalidad ng pamamahala, no? May mabuti kang mamamayan kung may mabuti kang pamamahala, no? Sa tingin ko, no? Kung maganda ang kalidad ng pamamahala katulad na nakikita natin sa ibang bansa, no? Marami sa kababayan natin ay nagtatrabaho sa ibang bansa at nakikita nila na mabuti, maganda ang kalidad ng mga ng pamamahala doon. Pag kailangan pumila ka, walang unahan, walang singitan, 'di ba? Pag nagbayad ka, eksakto susupli sa iyo. Walang palakasan, no? Nakita lahat 'to ng mga kababayan natin. Kaya sumusunod sila. Kaso, pagbalik nila sa Pilipinas, nawala na naman yung kalidad ng pamahala. So, balik na naman sila. Yung karamihan sa kababayan natin, pagtapak pa lang sa NAIA, ano na naman, no? Organized chaos na naman ang attitude.
Nag-iibang anyo.
Nag-iibang anyo, no? So, ang Pinoy, hindi pasaway. Ang Pinoy, marunong sumunod sa batas, no? Ilagay mo siya sa konteksto na lahat sumusunod sa batas at walang naglalamangan, talagang susunod tayo sa batas. Kaso kung ang sistema mo ay may palakasan at may kanya-kanya lang, may pamilya, angkan-angkan, talagang I think it was hardwired into our system given our colonial past, no? In the past, the state and government were considered not working for the benefit of the Filipinos. So bakit pa tayo susunod, no? Diskarte na lang susundin natin, no? So kailangan baguhin din natin. So both it's an attitudinal, behavioral, and at the same time it's institutional and structural.
Okay, Attorney Mike, regarding institutional changes or reforms, lahat naman kayo nag-advocate ng political and electoral reforms. Pero alam natin yung nangyari under this administration or even during previous administrations, very little moved, if not nothing actually moved. So, for example, yung political party system, ano yung dapat gawin dyan para maayos once and for all?
So, yung rotten political system natin needs to be addressed directly, no? And that is done via the enactment of the Political Party Development Act. So, hindi na natin kailangan lumayo, eh. Hindi na natin kailangan maghanap, maghalingkat sa baul, eh. It's already there. It has been filed several times. So that is the way to address that institutional pathology in our electoral system, right?
Pangitin natin yung salient points na, no? Yung provisions siya regarding sa political turncoatism, for instance.
Yes.
Campaign financing. Yan. Sige, yes. Pangitin natin.
So yung prohibition against the yung balimbing, right? Malaking bagay na yun, eh. So kahit kung yun lang yung provision ng batas, it's going to affect a big change already, right? Yung campaign financing, I think this is an innovation introduced by Dean July. Maybe he can expound on it. Yung konsepto na the state will subsidize political parties. Now, actually, medyo we are on different perspectives here kasi I am very wary about that and he is supportive of that because meron din flip side yun, eh. Kasi if state subsidizes political parties, the context there is that we already have mature political parties, right? But since we are starting from zero, there has to be some kind of nuancing with that innovation. So It cannot be a direct transplant from what is done in Germany or what is done in Switzerland. Okay. So if we're going to adopt it, it has to be tailor-fitted for us, for our current situation, that we absolutely have no genuinely principled democratic political parties. So yung mga ganong innovations in that law, we need those institutional changes. Eh. That's the only way that we can start having a mature political party politics.
Sige. We're going to reserve a different episode regarding how to reform political parties. Pero as a final point, I'd like to take advantage of Dean Ronald Mendoza, who did the studies regarding political dynasties. No? Gusto ko lang ipasagot sa inyo, Dean Ronald, yung laging tinatanong eh. Hindi naman lahat ng mga dynasty masama. Meron naman mga tumutulong, yung mga nagbibigay ng ayuda at biyaya sa mga tao. At yung laging binabanggit ito, I usually hear this from former President Joseph Estrada. We're not a monarchy. Hindi naman namin pinapamana yung posisyon. So ina-elect kami democratically. So what's the point? So what's wrong? Di ba? So as a final word, very briefly lang, since we don't have much time anymore. Dino, no?
Yeah, well, ano yan eh? Magkakasama yung mga problema. I think yung pinag-umpisaan ng usapan natin, yung patronage politics, tapos napunta tayo doon sa rent seeking, yung kakambal nun. Saan nila kinukuha yung perang pambigay nila bilang mga patron, di ba? Kundi kinuha rin nila sa kaba ng bayan o di kaya naman ay sa renta, sa ekonomiya. Dahil sa position nila, meron silang control doon sa iba-ibang parte ng ekonomiya. Ngayon, yung political dynasties, yung pangatlong leg nitong magulong sistema na to, ay dahil meron silang control over the economy dahil monopolized na nila yung political power. Yung hawak na nila yung kapangyarihan eh. At ang hirap nilang banggain dyan. So kung sinasabi nila na hindi naman to monarkiya, actually we're seeing lordship rather than leadership most of the time. Yung pipiliin nila para tatakbo yung anak nila, pamangkin nila, kapatid nila o di kaya asawa nila. At minsan ninenegotiate na nila yan para wag babanggain ng iba. O sige, dyan ka na sa distrito na yan, di na ako mag-feel dyan. Dito kami sa lugar na to. Pag nagbagaan, dyan nagkakapatayan, dyan nagkakagisgisan yung mga political clans. Makikita natin biglang may kompetisyon, pero hindi kompetisyon ng ideya. Kompetisyon ng bala at saka ng takutan at ng pera. So hindi, walang ikabubuti sa bayan yung ganyang klaseng political competition. At kitang-kita naman na talagang halos pinaghahati-hatian na nila yung Pilipinas. So habang lumalago yung kanilang mga negosyo at nagtatabaan yung kanilang mga salin. So yan yung issue ng political dynasties na kailangan natin talagang itigil. Naniniwala ako na merong mga mauhusay na pinuno sa bawat pamilya. Pero tama si Dean July, it's only a matter of time na kung masama yung sistema, even you as a reformist, it will only take some time before you transform into the monster you wanted to replace. Lalo na kung wala kang mga kasama na reformist din. Okay. So kailangan ayusin din natin yung sistema na yan.
Okay. Dean Ronald Mendoza, Professor Julio Tehanki, and Attorney Mike Kela Yusinko. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us this evening. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you. So that's it for this episode. This has been your host, Christian Esguerra. Watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now for recaps and exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow after the fact.